The following program is a paid production of Mike Novak, LLC. The opinions, rants, confessions, and lame jokes presented are not necessarily the views of WCPT or its parent corporation, NewsWeb Radio. Besides, if Mike was running for office, the tapes of these shows alone would get him kicked off the ballot.
Once again, folks, the White House is rocked with scandal due to broken promises. I'm referring, of course, to Iron Chef America. On January 3rd, the First Lady appeared on their Super Chef battle to give the contestants their secret ingredient.
Your secret ingredient is anything from the White House garden.
Anything, of course, except Joe Biden. They need him to scare off the crows. Now, I'm not sure what the chefs harvested, but the viewers got a load of manure. Because according to today's Chicago Tribune, the fruits and vegetables used on the show weren't from the White House. For all we know, folks, that cauliflower was from Kenya. What happened to transparency? We knew they had a gardening agenda. But has everyone forgotten Barack Obama's campaign promise about their garden?
It'll be televised on C-SPAN.
Well, so far, the only vegetable I've seen on C-SPAN is Robert Byrd. Though, John Boehner has the same coloring as a yam.
Live from the beautiful Showcase Studios on South Pulaski Road, just across the street from the 53A bus stop and in between Paco's Tacos and Zaka Tacos, it's The Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast green, gardening, and environment program. Heard every Sunday right here on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Good planets are hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes. True currents and thriving seas. Wind blowing through breathing trees. Strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find. Good planets are in demand.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by Sid's Greenhouses, Chicagoland's premier garden centers, and by The Care of Trees, our business's people and their love for trees. And by WRD Environmental, creating sustainable landscapes since 1997. Podcasts of this program, along with green tips, valuable links, and DeMaio weather, are a click away at MikeNovak.net. That's MikeNovak.net. Now here's the man who's redefining green, which means that he's busy working on the Wikipedia entry, Mike Novak.
One more time.
You know, I saw that Iron Chef competition. I got invited to a party that night. And it was, come on, it's after the new year. Let's watch the Iron Chef. And first of all, I said, what's an Iron Chef?
Yeah.
I had no idea. I never got into that show.
I have friends who love it.
Yeah. Apparently, there are a lot of folks out there who love that show. And one of the guys on that competition was Emeril, who my parents just adored. They would watch him all the time. Never cook any of his stuff,
right.
but just loved watching him. And so I got into it. It was really fun. Now, it helps if you got a big old flat screen, HD screen. In a big old
plasma crystalline,
I mean, it was huge.
Size of a football field.
Right, exactly. And I'm not going to tell you where I was, because protect the innocent and the guilty alike. But bunch of us sitting around and watching with fascination these guys put this stuff together, and they give them an hour.
Yeah.
And
did Michelle look good? Did Michelle come out?
Was on for like 10 seconds.
Yeah.
That was it.
Yeah. Did she
and
have
they kept
like
showing
a,
the same?
She have a toga on or like a the chef's toga or anything like
no,
that?
No. She. They were. It was at the White House.
Oh.
Because then they
They cut to her sitting there like, No.
She walks out. They collect the vegetables, or before they collect the vegetables, she walks out of the White House, and they had like a 10-second clip, and they, you know, I'm sure her handlers are saying, okay, we're going to do this in 30 seconds, and we're going to do it in one take, and then see ya. Because that's all the time she's got today.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you may think you're big chefs, but this is Michelle Obama.
Iron chef. You're nickel chef compared to Michelle.
Exactly. And then they showed the same clip about 30 times to make it seem like, oh, Michelle was part of the show. Barack never got it. He wasn't anywhere near it.
He was meeting with Bush and Clinton. They were talking about Haiti.
But I didn't see that article. Maybe you want to call that up, Tribune article about the stuff not being from the garden, because they made a big deal of them picking the produce from the garden with the cameras in there watching them pick it. So it makes me so there's the articles. Now that's politicsdaily.com. That's not the Trib, but that's okay. I'm sure once the Tribune got a hold of it, everybody else picked it up.
Oh, I'm sure.
It says Iron Chef used ringers. Oh. See, that page is not there. Let's see. We did mention the Trib. Let's see if the Trib version is up there. Wow, everybody jumped on it afterward.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, but at any rate, whether or not they used the vegetables from the garden, I don't know. They looked great while they were picking them. and they look great in the kitchen. But the kitchen, of course, is, I guess, on the West Coast someplace. So, anyway, all I want to say is I had more fun watching that than I ever imagined I could have watching a cooking show.
Found it.
Okay.
January 14th was the article date.
All right. Food Network admits Iron Chef America vegetables were not from the White House garden. For months, the Food Network, this is Kevin Pang wrote for the Trib, for months, the Food Network ran ads about a forthcoming episode of the Iron Chef America, its flagship Chefs Plus Secret Ingredient versus Time competition. The show would take place at the White House Garden with Michelle Obama making a cameo, and it really was a cameo, and plugging her responsible eating initiative, which is cool. The network promised it would be its biggest episode ever. Well, I got to tell you, there was lots of dramatic music.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's like, what's that show? Where you can win $1 million. It's the same thing. They're like, dun-dun-dun.
I know. It's just goofy.
It's like, no. It's like, what color is wild rice? For $500,000.
Oh, who wants to be a millionaire?
Exactly. I'm so out of touch with TV. I listen to the radio and I read books.
You know, the thing about Who Wants to Be a Millionaire is I can't watch it for a couple of reasons. A, the stupid questions they ask at the beginning.
Yeah.
If you're going to make a joke out of it, then let's just start with a $1,000 question and ask a reasonably hard one instead of going through 100 and 500 ask really stupid questions.
Yeah.
You know, and then you get some guy for the $100 question has to use a lifeline and you're screaming at the TV.
I love that. I saw a guy lose it on the first question.
Oh.
It was how many blackbirds were baked in a pie and he didn't know it.
420. Everybody knows that.
I know. He was like, four? And they're like, we're sorry. I'm like, you're an idiot. Get off my TV.
I know. Really, get off my TV right now. So back to the story from the Trib. The buildup matched the reality. The January 3rd Iron Chef America drew 7.6 million viewers. I was one of them. The highest rated show in network history. In it, superstar chef Mario Batali teamed with Emeril Lagasse and Bobby Flay with White House chef Christeda Comerford to cook five dishes using the secret ingredient produced from the White House garden, except for one thing. As first reported on AOL's Politics Daily. So Politics Daily did get it first.
Yeah.
We should have gone to them. You know, let's get this Trib thing off of here.
Yeah.
Boy. All right. The fruits and vegetables used in the show weren't from the White House. They were stunt produce, ringers, stunt doubles, huh? At the beginning of the two-hour special, the chefs were shown picking sweet potatoes, broccoli, fennel, and tomatillos from the White House garden. Then the chefs were seen walking into Kitchen Stadium, produce in hand. One problem, the show's filmed in New York. Oh, it's in New York, not the West Coast. Okay. Due to the production delay between the shoot at the White House and the shoot at Food Network, the produce used in Kitchen Stadium during the Super Chef battle was not actually from the White House garden, said Food Network spokeswoman Lisa Kruger in a statement to The Talk. Instead, the chefs used replacement produce, though only the same types of fruits and vegetables picked from the White House garden. Honey was the only ingredient that actually came from 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. The White House garden produce, Kruger said, was donated to a local pantry.
If you were had your stunt vegetable, what would your stunt vegetable be?
My stunt vegetable?
Yeah.
Not my stunted vegetable.
No, no. I don't think you could produce a stunted vegetable.
Oh, I could, believe me. It's easy. Welcome to the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. This is part of Self-Serve Sunday. I mean, Soft-Serve Sunday.
Self-Help Sunday.
Yes.
Where and you can help yourself.
Help yourself. And you know what? Here's what we're going to do. I've been following with interest the tragedy in Haiti, and it's just, what a nightmare.
Yeah.
What a nightmare for those folks. And, you know, wait till we start going into the politics of it. We're not even into the politics.
No.
And by the politics, I mean, how do we let a country get like this in our hemisphere?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, half the problem is they have no, you know, organized government. There are no building codes.
Yeah, and it's due to a lot of policies. You know, I've done a little reading on it. And like I said, I don't want to go into the politics of it right now because people are in need. And so one of the things I did on my website, MikeNovak.net, MikeNovak.net, on this week's show, I listed a bunch of the places where you can donate for Haitian relief. Now, I heard Dick Kay talking about this yesterday, too, and he had a bunch of places, and I think he's got them up on his website, with Doogie's Place.
Mm-hmm.
And that's good. And I wanted to do that, too. And what I tried to do, because right now, one of the stories you're hearing in the news is about scams. Scams going on and people.
I know. It's tragic, but it's true.
You know, and it's a tragedy like this brings out the best and the worst.
Absolutely.
In people. And sometimes the worst in companies as well, when you've got the credit card companies, most of which are, you can hear them beeping as they back up from imposing surcharges on their credit cards for this kind of thing. So I guess American Express has backed off, Capital One has backed off, and they're going to allow for a window, I guess, till the end of February. We might want to find some of that information, too. But the idea is that they were getting hammered by and rightly so. Rightly so for these money grubbing companies.
Yes.
I have so much anger towards credit card companies. I have so much anger towards the big banks in this country. It just boils up within me.
Yeah, I agree. I'm hoping that once they kinda like get the healthcare bill like into the next level, that's what they take on next.
Well,
they're gonna do healthcare and then the credit card companies.
You know what? If you hold your breath, you will turn blue.
I will turn blue and pass out and
start
convulsing on the floor.
Exactly. And I will have to throw water in your face. Okay, so we don't want to do that. So some of those companies have been backing off. So what I did is I put various sites. I did a little searching on the internet yesterday, and I'm trying to make it easy for you if you want to donate. Now, of course, the problem right now as I'm looking at the news stories today and last night is getting the relief in.
Right.
You know, you can collect the money, and then you got to get there.
Right.
It's weirdly, well, it echoes any disaster like this. When the infrastructure, that didn't exist in the beginning, what was there is completely trashed. You can't get to people.
Right.
And that is part of the problem. And that's going to be the story you hear for the next few days and perhaps weeks is how hard it has been to get to people.
I saw yesterday that they're dispatching about 10,000 American troops to Haiti to help get the supplies in, to help get the relief workers in, to sort of carve a pathway through. And then they're also there in a police effort so people don't steal and, you know, the goods and products that are coming by and stuff like that. And I got into a huge conversation about how, you know, that's what the American military should be doing, is going and helping and things like that. And then we got in a big debate over Iraq and Afghanistan.
Wait. And with whom were you talking?
My father.
Of course.
A conservative.
Oh, okay.
And I am not.
I hope he's not a ditto head.
No, he's not. He's very old school and set in his ways. And, you know, he thinks he's right, whether or not he's wrong. And that's it.
Well, a lot of people think they're right.
He's Irish.
That's the way people... Well, it doesn't take being an Irish either, to tell you the truth.
Stubborn. I usually don't
go down this road, but you know what? Rush Limbaugh is an idiot.
Oh, God, yes.
He's a frickin' idiot.
Yes.
And that's all I'm going to say about that.
He angers me, as you were talking about credit card companies, Rush Limbaugh. Yeah. I get the same reaction.
And I say this again from listening to Dick Kay yesterday and going, Dick, hammer these people. Come on. Take them
Dick's
down.
Dick's a nice guy.
He is.
He's a nice man.
He is, and he's willing to, and I understand it. He said, you know, speak your piece.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Getting back to the relief.
I found something on Huffington Post via the credit cards as well. It's open for Haiti.
Mm-hmm.
Visa, MasterCard, American Express, and Discover have now all announced that they will waive fees for some donations related to the crisis in Haiti.
And how do you identify the sum?
Yeah, exactly.
Why don't you look down that while I'm telling folks about what I've got up on my website, which is I've got a link to the official White House Haiti earthquake relief site. I've got a link to USAID, USAID. It outlines the response of the United States government and other agencies to the Haitian crisis. I've got a link to Interaction, which is a coalition of U.S.-based international non-governmental organizations focused on the world's poor and most vulnerable people. There's a on that page, which is really great, that's the third link down, the third bullet point I have up there. There's a comprehensive list of organizations that you can donate to. And it just goes on and on and on. There's so many organizations you can donate to. But then I also have Doctors Without Borders link there, Partners in Health. They've been on the ground in Haiti for over 20 years. I've got Haiti Emergency Relief Fund. They're there. And then the one that you may want to go to when you pick out an organization that you want to donate to, the very last link I have is a group, an organization called Charity Navigator. Because I know folks think that every time they donate something, well, they don't know, actually, whether it's all going to good causes or whether some of the money's getting funneled off, like with the credit cards. You know that some not all charitable organizations are created equal. Some of their operating money or the funds go to operations rather than the people who need it. And Charity Navigator is a great site because you can go on there and you can type in the name of the charitable organization that you want to donate to, and it will give you, for instance, okay, I'm going to go here and type in Red Cross, all right, on charity search on charitynavigator.org. All right. And it's got American Red Cross, and it compares charities. It's got 3 stars out of 4, the American Red Cross. And, you know, it also had a list. Let me see here, because I saw, oh, here's an A to Z directory. Yes, Heather, you have your hand up.
I'm in reading this article from the Huffington Post regarding the transaction fees and charitable donations with credit cards. It does not mention American Express. They may have temporarily waived, but it says one notable exception to the rule in this country is Capital One Bank. Through its no-hassle giving site, the bank waives transaction costs for holders of its Visa or MasterCard's cards so that 100% of the people's donation goes to their chosen charity. So I think if you do it, there might be the loophole there. Like if you go through their no-hassle giving site, they'll get 100%. I don't know if...
But if you use it...
If you use a standard donation, they'll still take their 2.5. They said it's standard on all credit cards. And some here, if you read lower, some charities actually pay out 2.5%, and all charitable organizations that qualify, this is American Express's Giving Express program, get a 2.25% processing rate. But even these fees are far greater than the marginal cost of the online transaction. So you gotta look into it, I would assume.
Yeah, and that's the problem, and that's why I advise people
that's
to go
terrible.
To Charity Navigator, and you can see where it goes, and they evaluate charities, and they have the ratings on various categories. They rate them by evaluating the organizational efficiency. Their organizational capacity, and then they issue an overall rating. And they look at program expenses, administrative expenses, fundraising expenses, fundraising efficiency. So really, I'm doing this because I know that folks sometimes don't trust the organizations they're donating to that have all the money go there.
Right.
Well, here's a place on my website where you can log on, type in the name of the organization you want to donate to, and see how efficiently they spend your money.
Yeah. I've always been a big fan of the UNICEF and the American Red Cross. I've always felt, you know, they were a safe route. But I heard different, like I heard that the texting your donation, I heard 100% of that went to the Red Cross, but and that was backed by the White House.
Yeah, but that's the problem. It goes to the Red Cross, and then how much does the Red Cross use
right.
in terms how much do they get out? Or, you know, for instance,
yeah.
Okay, let me.
I have to say, too, my dad did text his donation. He did do it. And I've never seen the man message in his life, and he did it.
And by the way, I've got that text information on the site as well. And that is, of course, you text Haiti to 90999, and it donates $10 to the American Red Cross. Now, I went online here to Charity Navigator, and I'm typing in American Red Cross. Boop, doop, doop. And if I go there, like I said, it gives you 3 out of 4 stars. Now, let's look at the rating. Let's see. We can compare charities here. Oop, I got to do a side-by-side. Okay. Oh, here we go. Click right on here. For instance, its overall rating is 54.62 on their scale. Program expensive, in terms of organizational efficiency, program expenses 90.1%. Their efficiency rating is also, so let me just go to the way they break it down. Efficiency rating for organizational efficiency is 36.51, which is again 3 out of 4 stars. Organizational capacity, 3 out of 4 stars. So, It's not the top of the list because there are four. I've seen organizations that have 4 out of 4 stars. They do pretty well, but there are a lot of organizations that you can donate to. And you can check it out yourself. So an informed consumer is...
And also an informed donator.
Exactly. Informed donator is what we're talking about, and you can do that. So that's what I did. Now, the other thing, Let's give away some money to charity.
Okay.
And I thought the way I would do it is have a couple of questions here. If you call me at 773-838-WCPT, 773-838-9278, and answer either a gardening or an environmental question correctly, I will donate to a charity that I have checked out and made sure it's going to the right place. And I think what we'll do it at the rate of $10 per correct answer. It's not a lot of money, but let's do something.
Every little bit helps.
So call me 773-838-WCPT, 773-838-9278. We'll give you a chance to answer a question, either an environmental question or a gardening question. You get it right, I will donate money to a charity. We'll do a few of these before the end of the show. And I hope you give us a call. 773-838-9278. Give us a holler. Now, the January-February edition of Chicagoland Gardening Magazine is out on the newsstands. And I've got the inside scoop on why you should pick up a copy. In fact, Ms. Fry has her...
I love it.
She does. She's become an instant fan to the magazine. Mainly because I lay free copies on her. But
there's that.
That always helps.
But there's an amazing article in there this week about doing your garden and trimming it up in 20 minutes.
Yep. Written by a guy named Mike Novak.
Yeah. I met him. He's okay.
No, he's kind of a goofball.
The pictures in the magazine say he is.
Anyway, that's one of the magazines, and I got stories in the magazine for January, February, and I got to tell you, some of the worst photos of me ever taken. So that'll be reason alone for you to pick up a copy of the magazine. And the worst posture you've ever seen in the garden. Anybody who knows anything about ergonomics is going to say, what are you doing? But, you know, this is me. You know, what can I tell you? Now, not just this issue, but every issue is a must-have publication. However, this is the Get Ready for the Gardening Year edition, which means that there are stories on how to interpret what's on a seed packet, how to set up grow lights for when those packets arrive and you start raising your little plant babies. And there's the calendar that tells you what to do in the garden all year long, month by month. This issue of Chicagoland Gardening Magazine even has a three-hole punch so you can put it right into your gardening binder. This is the garden magazine for our region, which means Chicago and environs. You can find Chicagoland Gardening Magazine in your local store or garden center. More than 800 new newsstand locations have been added in the last couple of months. But why trudge out to the store when you can have it delivered to your home? So go online to ChicagolandGardening.com or call 888. It's a new number, so write it down. 888-265-3600. 888-265-3800.
DR Services Unlimited has been providing Chicago's North Shore with award-winning remodeling and design-build services since 1991, giving their clients top-quality service and real value. They're on the cutting edge of green building technology, helping clients make their home more energy efficient without sacrificing beauty or function. If you want to make your home more energy efficient, simply want to add a room or renovate, call DR Services at 847-998-1687 or visit them at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Those DR guys, well, Ron Cowgill, who's Mr. DR Services, will be here at 10 o'clock with the Mighty House. They're on location today. Nobody here in the studio. They're out on location, so stand by for that, and I'll tell you more about that later. Okay, we got a couple of guinea pigs here. Let's go to line one. Tim, how you doing? Wait, hold on, Tim, sorry. Hello, Tim, you there?
I'm here.
And where are you?
Minooka.
Nanooka, Illinois.
Yeah.
Where's Nanooka?
It is by the Joliet area.
Oh, okay.
Pretty cool.
Are you picking us up on 99.9 down there?
I am, yeah.
I love the way that there's a couple of signals that just boom in. That's one of them. You go out west, the one in DeKalb just booms out there, too. So I'm sure we got a few people out there. All right, what do you want? You want a gardening question or you want a environmental question?
How about an environmental?
You want an environmental? Okay. Okay. Here's a good one for you. Nice and easy. Well, they're not that easy. But if you get it right, now you don't get anything today. I'm not sending you.
It's fine. I don't want nothing.
but $10 will go to the Haiti relief. What's the number? And this is multiple choice, by the way, Tim.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, so you got a chance here.
All right.
What's the number one trash item found on beaches? All right. Is it A, cigarette butts, B, plastic bottles, C, seaweed, or D, plastic bags?
I'm going to say B, plastic bottles.
Now, you're sure you want to say B? Are you sure? You know, I'm going to do it like they do on some of those quiz shows on some other.
Is that your final answer?
Is that your final answer? Do you want to? Do you need a lifeline? Heather's here if you need her.
Yeah, I might need a lifeline, but I'm pretty sure it's B. I'm not positive, you know.
Uh huh. Heather,
well, I'm Googling.
That's cheating.
I'd say plastic bottles or cigarette butts. I have a feeling there's a few.
That's what I was thinking, A or B, but
yeah.
Okay, now you guys have narrowed it down, and our computer's just eliminated C and D, so you are on the right track now. You sure you want to stick with plastic bottles there, Tim?
Yeah, I want to stick with plastic bottles.
Oh, so close.
Cigarettes.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. From 1996 to 2000, international marine debris collectors found over 6 million cigarette filters on beaches, followed by over 3 million food bags. Where do all the cigarette filters come from? Well, much of the blame is on careless beachgoers, but they are not the only source. Smokers who flick cigarette filters out a car window, stamp cigarettes out on the sidewalk, or dump their car ashtrays in a parking lot, contribute to marine debris problem, because cigarette filters can wash or blow down storm drains that lead into our local waterways and eventually the ocean. I tell you what, Tim, I don't care that you got it wrong. We're still taking the $10.
Yay!
And that's going to, wait, where's the bell? Hold on. Here's the bell. All right, $10 going to Haitian Relief. I'm glad you were listening. Thanks for calling, Tim. And now you know, next time somebody asks, this will stop a party dead in its tracks if you give them this little factoid.
Maybe they'll stop smoking, right?
Maybe they will. Maybe it'll help. All right, thanks for calling.
Have a good day.
You too. We're going to do one more before we get to Rick DeMaio. You with us, Rick?
Yeah, I'm listening, Mike.
Okay. And you've got some information on earthquakes.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to ask people about, you know, particular parts of, you know, plate tectonics or the Richter scale or whether it's something deeper you can go into that.
Do you have a question that would go along with that? Okay, I mean, did you whip one up? What are the two plates
that form the fault line directly under Haiti that was responsible for the 7.0 earthquake?
I used to know this. I plate tectonics is one of my favorite subjects in
one of them is a dinner plate and the other one's the plate that's in my head.
There's the Pacific plate, which is the largest, right, Rick?
Yeah, but do you want to give people choices?
Yeah. Here's what you do. We lost Kathy. Kathy, don't go away. Let's go to Mike, though, all right? I'll tell you what, Rick. Mike, you with us?
Yes, I'm here.
And you're out in DeKalb, so you must be catching us on 92.5.
No, I'm on the AM side.
Oh, you're on the AM side. Well,
yay!
Woohoo! We like it on the AM side, too. All right, can you give us a multiple choice there, Rick, with the...
What was the caller's name again?
Mike.
Mike. Yeah, Mike. Okay, nothing worse than having too many mics in the radio studio, right? All right, so Mike has to guess correctly two of the four plates, okay, that form the fault line that go directly under Hispaniola, which obviously the western side of that is Haiti, okay? I'll give you the four choices, Mike, and you choose two. Okay, the four are the Puerto Rican Trench, the Puerto Rican plate, the Caribbean plate, the Eurasian plate, and the North American plate. So which of those two?
Wow, that's really hard. Okay, not really.
If you think about it.
Okay, so
Puerto Rican plate, the Caribbean plate, okay, the Pacific plate, and the North American plate. Which of those two actually form the fault line under
Hispaniola? I said Pacific and the Puerto Rican.
Now, do you need a lifeline there?
Yes, I definitely need a lifeline on that.
Now you said the Pacific, and the what was the other one, Mike?
Puerto Rican.
The Puerto Rican, and the other two options, Rick, are
was the North American and the Caribbean.
Okay, now.
Where is he going to go for the lifeline there?
Well, both Heather and I are here, so I would say, Mike, Pacific, I would think not, because that's going to be on in the Pacific and not
yes.
the Atlantic.
That's near the Ring of Fire, the Pacific plate, and that's not this one.
So, now, the thing is, you've got the Caribbean and the Puerto Rican plate. I didn't even know there was a Puerto Rican plate.
I didn't either.
What was the fourth choice there, Rick? I keep forgetting.
The Caribbean plate.
Wait, the Caribbean, the Puerto Rican,
the North American, and the
Eurasian. And
the, yeah, see,
not the Eurasian. That's Euroasia.
Right.
That's way geographically elsewhere.
So, Mike, I think we're dealing with
North American. And what do you think, Mike?
And Puerto Rican.
And North American and the Puerto Rican. You know, I'm stumped on this. This is a hard one, Rick.
I think that would be my answer. I concur with Mike.
Okay, the answer is the North American plate and the Caribbean plate.
Oh.
There is no such thing as the Puerto Rican plate. There is a Puerto Rican trench, and the Puerto Rican trench is on the edge of the Caribbean plate, okay, where a tremendous earthquake did occur back in the early 1730s off the coast of Puerto Rico, which actually produced a small tsunami up and down the east coast of the original 13 colonies.
And when was that?
That was in the early 1700s.
Wow.
Right. I didn't know that.
Right. And the Eurasian plate and the North American plate actually meet up right in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean. In fact, they meet up right in directly the middle of the island of Iceland. So if you ever go to Iceland, you can actually put one foot on the North American plate and one foot on the Eurasian plate.
That's why it's got all those active geysers and volcanic activity,
exactly.
Correct?
Exactly.
I can't believe you threw a trick question at us.
Or a trick answer. Yeah. That's okay. That's all right.
Well, Mike, listen, because it was a trick question, we're going to donate anyway. So,
right. There you go.
So I'm glad you called. Thanks a lot, buddy.
Thank you.
Have a great day. And that's Rick DeMaio, who's left behind with the trick weather forecast here. Actually, that's tectonics. Plate tectonics is fascinating
stuff. I think it's wonderfully fascinating.
Yeah. It is, and I teach that at my natural disasters class, both at Columbia College and now at Oakland Community College. And one thing, Mike, that I don't think people realize, but I really haven't heard anybody say, why did so many people die, but yet this was only a 7.0 earthquake?
I thought it, actually, because I know that we've had a lot worse earthquakes with less damage. For instance, the Alaskan earthquake in 64 was, what, 8.4?
That was above a 9. That was literally a 9.0 earthquake.
No, really?
There have been several up there. There was a 9.3 off the coast of Chile. The one that formed off the coast of Sumatra 5 years ago, that was a 9.3, but obviously produced also a tsunami as well. But the reason why this was so devastating was because it was very shallow, Mike. This was only about 10 miles below the surface of the earth. And there's two different types of waves that develop. Actually, there's three. There's what's called P waves, S waves, and then what we call surface waves. P waves is the primary wave, S is the secondary wave, and the third wave is the surface wave. Most of the energy from earthquakes doesn't make it up to the surface. It basically emanates in a horizontal direction from the epicenter of where that quake occurs, and some of it actually goes back towards the center of the earth. But because this quake was only 10 miles deep, it was very shallow, as well as the quake that occurred off the coast of Sumatra, which was only about 16 miles below the surface, a lot of the energy went right up to the surface and basically took the plate, the North American plate and the Caribbean plate, which was moving about an inch a year over the last 200 years. It's been known that that area is still very active, but because that fault line runs directly under Port-au-Prince, you had basically a potential disaster pretty much equate right into what's called a catastrophe at that point. That's one of the things that I teach in my class, is that it's not so much how things happen, but we have a combination of several factors. Even though it was only a 7, and you say, yeah, 7 is pretty strong, but the quake that occurred in Northridge, California back in 94, that was a 6.7. It killed 67 people, produced $15 billion of damage. But then all of a sudden you get a 7.0, it's like, well, how does a 7.0 kill 100,000 people potentially because it occurred directly under a very densely populated region, poor housing codes, obviously, but it was also a very shallow earthquake. So a lot of the energy went right up to the surface, Mike.
I didn't know that. That's fascinating stuff. Now, do you normally include plate tectonics as part of meteorology?
Absolutely. Well, no. What the class is, it's a natural disasters class.
Oh, okay.
And the bottom, the way the class is taught at both Columbia College, and it's the most popular class there in the math and science department, there's actually five different sections taught. And I teach one of them, a couple of the teachers, geologists teach two of them. What we generally do is we try to teach people the difference between a disaster and a catastrophe or a hazard or a risk based on population, based on the socioeconomic background, of the people, based on the infrastructure, based on the political ability to form a recovery team. And then we also talk about whether or not certain, say, flooding events, like the flooding that occurred in Atlanta just past September, when you look at that flooding, if you would have taken that flooding event 50 years ago, you wouldn't have had $4.5 billion of damage, because what I did was I showed them photographs of before and after, and basically these people were building houses directly in the floodplain, which is what you're not supposed to do. So what we talk about is the fact that you, and this is another way of living within your environment and being sustainable, is not pushing yourself to the limit and not pushing yourself beyond the brink of what Mother Nature is going to dish out at you, okay? And the same goes for, certain type of building codes in tornadoes, in Tornado Alley. And that was particularly the case after Hurricane Andrew in southern Florida. They realized that a lot of the homes that were destroyed in southern Florida was due to poor building codes. And after that, they went in and said, okay, you can't build this, you can't build that, you got to build this, because most likely when one of these things are going to come through again, instead of having to completely repair and rebuild 100,000 homes, it's probably a lot easier just to repair maybe 20,000 homes or something like that. So that's one of the things that we try to teach. And obviously, I'm in the middle of rewriting my course, because of my first two lessons is going to be all about the horrible events in Haiti just this past week.
You know, Heather just went online and found records of the strongest and the deadliest earthquakes on record. Mm. Haiti's already number 7 in terms of loss of life.
Oh yeah, and
it's unbelievable.
Yeah, and it's pretty sad, because I think, you know, you hate to think about this, but I know you early in the show you were talking about how do we let a country like this in our hemisphere get like this. You know, you probably could have come out and said, okay, this country is in poor health, in poor shape, horrible government, bad infrastructure ever since the revolution. I forget how many years ago, 25 years ago. You know, they were on a path to freedom, but obviously it didn't go the way they were supposed to go. If you would have said, let's reach out, let's help them, let's get a massive, campaign to donate to help them, I don't think people would have said, oh, I don't care about Haiti. I don't care about Haiti. But now all of a sudden you have that care. So you wonder in the back of your mind, and there was an article, I bring this up in this past weekend's Wall Street Journal, called Rising from the Ruins. It talks about Lisbon in 1755, which experienced not only a horrible earthquake, but also a terrible tsunami, which killed hundreds of thousands, I think about 50,000 people. You talk about the earthquake in San Francisco in 1906, and you talk about the Great Chicago Fire in 1871. Will this be, or is there a silver lining that will enable the Haitians to rise up from the despair and poverty that they've been experiencing over the last 20 years with this earthquake and start anew? And you wonder if something like this has a silver lining to it. I just wonder if that's something that maybe some of your listeners want to get in on, Mike.
It's a possibility. You hope that the forces that have shaped it to this point, as you talked about, the political forces are going to be able to change, but often, how does that happen? And who's going to be the driving force behind that? But it's a very interesting possibility that this could be, there could be a silver lining to this.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So anyway, back to the weather, or to the weather. Yeah, because, well, I'll tell you what, let me do something here real quick, and then we will get to you and the forecast. You sent me an email about it. Everything looks gray. It seems like it's going to be gray forever.
So much for a sunny weekend in the 40s, right?
Right, exactly. But we'll talk about that. That's Rick DeMaio. We'll have the full weather forecast in just a sec. Here's a tip from the Care of Trees. Are you aware that winter is an excellent time to prune your trees? One of the reasons is that winter pruning can slow the spread of diseases such as Dutch elm disease and oak wilt, and even an infestation of emerald ash borer. Why? Well, the tree's dormant and is less likely to produce running sap that attracts disease-carrying insects. Dormant pruning also helps protect your family and property from the potentially dangerous effects of wind shear, which may cause tree limbs to fall during a storm. In addition, pruning can also help reduce snow and ice damage to trees that are prone to this kind of damage. Birches, for instance, can be devastated by snow and ice if not pruned on a regular basis to help improve their structure. Make the care of trees your permanent partner in enhancing the value of your landscape. Whether you want to make sure all is well with the trees in your yard, you're changing your landscaping, or you're moving, invite the certified arborist at the Care of Trees to take a look. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220. 847-394-4220. The Care of Trees, their business is people and their love for trees.
How to look at an image. Why is it the most popular feature on the One History website? Using multicultural photographs, this remarkable teaching tool takes students and teachers step by step through the process of seeing, interpreting, and using photographs and other images. It provides information on where historical images can be found online and provides discussion questions that help you get the most out of an image. Check out the website at www.onehistory.org. That's www.onehistory.org. Or if you want us to work with your students directly, we can do a presentation at your school. Call us at 216-956-6300. 216-956-6300.
You're listening to the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. This is Self-Help Sunday, and Rick DeMaio is on the line with the weather. Heather, of course, loves this song. And anything from, you know, you don't, do you like even any of the music from now? You seem like,
no, I'm an old, I like some of it, but I'm an old soul. I like old, I like,
and of course,
I think rock hit its perfection in the mid-70s.
And before that with the Beatles, obviously.
Oh, well, obviously.
Yeah, well, obviously. Rick, Heather was looking at some photos I've got up on my website. I actually put them up last week, and forgot to mention it. If you go to my homepage, MikeNovak.net, and go to the bottom of the page, near the bottom, it says Cool Pictures. And I've got the sun pillar that we talked about. It's the worst photograph I've ever taken in my life because I had the wrong setting on the camera. And actually, it looks kind of artsy because it's all blurred.
Yeah, I like it.
But if I don't know if you get a chance, Rick, go to that picture and you can see it, the sun pillar was just amazing that morning.
We'll be having another one soon, Rick?
No. This is totally not the environment for sun pillars. This is the environment for sun quilts. we have like a quilt of cloudiness over you, and it's you know what happened, Heather and Mike, was all the numerical models were correctly forecast in this large area of Beecot pressure to develop between two different jet streams, one to the north and one to the south. And there's this large storm that's very typical of El Nino patterns, which has been the case pretty much for the last 2 months. You know, strong systems moving out of Old Mexico into Texas and the Gulf of Mexico, and then these systems moving through southern sections of Canada. The pattern prior to about a week ago where the systems moving through the southern plains was basically pulling a lot of cold air down from Canada and, you know, pretty much clearing us out and cooling us off. However, that part of the pattern has basically stopped, and what's occurred is we've gotten these two different areas of Pacific high pressure. These are basically air masses that come in off the ocean. They move across the Rocky Mountains, and they settle in over the Midwest. The problem is when you have those this time of the year, you tend to warm up the atmosphere enough where you melt the snow. That snow, from a standpoint of sublimation, goes from straight solid to gas, which means you have an increase in water vapor in the atmosphere in the lower levels. Now, if you don't mix that water vapor out and you're able to cool it off, which we do this time of the year because we only get about 9 hours of sunlight, you end up increasing the water vapor, increasing the reverse of evaporation, which would be condensation, and you end up getting a lot of haze and fog. So Thursday afternoon, we hit 40 degrees. That was our chance to really begin to scour out some of the low-level moisture, but the wind never got strong enough. Once that secondary front came through on Friday, we reinforced the cooler air at the surface, and the temperatures above us, like about 2,000 to 3,000 feet above us, were in the mid-40s. So if we didn't have this cloud cover and snow on the ground, we would easily be 50 degrees right now. But the fact is we have the snow on the ground, melting that snow into the moisture and producing fog and clouds. Instead of having a weekend of sunshine and a high near 40, we've basically had a lot of low-level clouds and some dense fog. In fact, visibility is all the way down to a quarter mile in many locations west of, say, 355 and 294 O'Hare Field right now, a quarter of a mile. A lot of that fog, because it's below freezing, is producing some, you know, black ice and some glazing conditions. So those people who are driving around outside in the city, no problems, but if you're driving west of the city and southwest and northwest, you'll probably hit some icy spots. So the bottom line is no sun pillars, a lot of clouds, a lot of fog. High, if we make it to 30 today, we'll be lucky. We only topped that at 27 yesterday, which was a far cry from a 35 to 40 degree high, which is what most of us were thinking. Similar conditions tomorrow. We may mix up the atmosphere enough to get a little bit of sun in here by Tuesday, but by and large, the next 4 days pretty much look overcast with highs near 30 to 35. The one thing about this, Mike, is that people end up using less energy to warm their homes because it's not a windy, cool air mass. So that's one good thing. We'll save on our energy a little bit. But still, over the next 5 to 7 days, nothing in the way of any Arctic air, nothing in the way of any big snowstorms anytime soon. So the weather kind of taking a break from the, you know, the harsh winter weather that we had in January and the first week of December and the first week of January, Mike.
Once again, you guys are caught a little bit off guard by the conditions on the ground here, but is the snow layer going to continue to suppress temperatures a little bit?
Yeah, I think so, because right now the snow has got that kind of crusty nature to it. And one thing I've noticed is that when the snow is very new, very young snow, very dry and fluffy, if you get sunshine, you can usually melt that snow in about 3 or 4 days, even if it's about 4 or 5 inches. Once the snow becomes packed down, kind of solidified with crusty, you know, a lot of water content in it.
Wait. I have to say, crusty snow.
It's the old fogey, right?
No, it's Krusty the Clown.
Oh, I got it. Krusty the Clown.
From Simpsons.
Yeah, right. Yeah, once that snow gets crusty, it becomes a little bit more difficult to melt it and to warm the atmosphere. But once again, I think long-term, patterns like this usually increase your groundwater as opposed to evaporate the moisture into the atmosphere. So this is good stuff as we head into the growing season, which begins in about, you know, 3.5 months. You always have to think ahead, right?
I'm looking ahead already. I mean, this is the time people start ordering their seeds. And as a matter of fact, in the second hour, I'm going to be talking to the folks from the Porter County, Indiana Master Gardeners Association about their 7th annual show. And one of the things they're doing is this seed exchange. And this is a great time to start thinking about that. So not much change now. Do you see any real cold air coming in real soon?
No. I think the next 5 to 6 days, temperatures probably average about 2 to 3 degrees above normal, mainly because the overnight lows won't be that cold.
Mm-hmm.
But highs anywhere between 30 and 35, and overnight lows about 20 to 25. So we'll be generally on the mild side, relatively speaking. I hate to say mild when you walk outside and you go, boy, it feels cold out.
And one more thing before I let you go.
Yep.
January 21st is this Thursday. I have been told... I've told by somebody that it is officially the most depressing day of the year because it's where we bottom out in terms of darkness
right.
and temperature and that sort of
right.
thing. It mm-hmm. also happens to be my birthday. So my birthday is on the most depressing day of the year. So how do you like them apples?
I love those apples. And then the 25th is the 25th anniversary of the coldest day in Chicago. We hit minus 26.
Oh, I remember that. I love that day. That was so cool. Your breath would just come out and freeze instantly. It was
inside your house.
Exactly. And then I was changing spark plugs in my 1970 Chevy Suburban that morning to try to get it to start. And I got it to start, but except my fingers fell off.
Hammer,
yeah.
That's what my dad told me.
Well, that's Rick DeMaio weather, and he's on the show every week around 8:30. And you can go to his website, DeMaioWeather.com. That's DIMAIO weather.
And on that website, Mike, if people go into tutorials, there's also a lot of information about the U.S. Geological Survey and earthquakes and play tectonics, and you'll have a lot of fun with it.
Yeah, so exactly. I'm you can check it all out. He covers it all, and that's why I'm glad he's on the show. Rick, we will talk next week, and you have a good one, all right? And,
have a good one.
Send me a birthday present.
It's ready in the mail.
I know it is. I'll talk to you later, buddy.
Bye.
Bye-bye. If a new commitment to indoor gardening is on your list of New Year's resolutions, that's indoor gardening, take time to look around the house and tend to some of those all-important indoor gardening tasks you've been neglecting. You want to take a look at your plants and figure out which of them you're going to rejuvenate. We're getting close to that time where repotting and pruning and getting the plants ready for spring is going to be a good idea. You can get fresh soil and a new roomy pot from Sid's Greenhouses. Now, don't pot too much ahead, too much larger than the size it's in. You just want to go up the next size if you're repotting. Sid's can help with the right soil fixes and fertilizers for every plant, in one of Chicagoland's largest assortments of decorative pots and pottery. In fact, Sid's received a truckload shipment of pottery this week. Of course, they have a great selection of lush tropical houseplants as well. Houseplants not only look great, they help improve your indoor air quality, and it's not too early to plant start planting this year's flower and vegetable garden, and Sid's is ready to help. Their shipment of flower and vegetable seed packets is in, and you know the popular varieties go fast, so visit Sid's early for the best selection, including certified organic seeds. Sid's Chicagoland's premier garden centers are located in Palos Hills on Southwest Highway and in Bolingbrook on Napier Plainfield Road at Hassert Boulevard. This is the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. Did we have an important phone call?
Well, we had a call from a man out, Dave, out in Hoffman Estates, a former seafaring man. He was in the Navy, and he was out at, I'm going to probably butcher
you
this.
You got about 10 seconds
okay.
here.
Ohana Bay, the southeast portion of the island of Oahu, where you used to be able to smoke on the beach. You can't smoke on the beach anymore. It's against the law. They will fine you. They will.
Good for them.
Yeah, there's a natural fish preserve close to that, and they don't want the nicotine filtering into the water and harming the fish.
We have to talk about that at some point. Well, we got the news coming up, CNN. We'll be back in the second hour. We'll do some more questions.
C-SPAN would kill to show the White House garden. Watching plants grow would certainly be more interesting than what they have on there now. And folks, this scandal that some are calling Watercress Gate. Not many, but some. It gets deeper. Not only are they lying to us about produce, they're lying to us about weird produce, like tomatillos and fennel. What's wrong with good old American produce, like tomatoes and funnels? It's what funnel cake is made of. And what the hell is kohlrabi? It sounds Muslim. I know I would be uncomfortable sitting next to one on an airplane. Folks, I miss the Reagan administration when you knew what a vegetable was. Ketchup. Folks, I promise this is my pledge. I will stay on top of Watercress Gate. I will be keeping my eyes on their potatoes. And I will be stalking their celery.
I wish I was a freight train, baby. Wish I was a diesel locomotive. I come whistling down them tracks, and I crash right through your door. Wish I was a freight train, baby. Wish I didn't have a heart, and you'd need a shovel full of coal just to get me started. Wish I was a freight train, baby. Wish I was a freight train.
Welcome back to the Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast green gardening and environment program. This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by Sid's Greenhouses, Chicagoland's premier garden centers, and by The Care of Trees, our business's people and their love for trees, and by WRD Environmental, creating sustainable landscapes since 1997. Podcasts of this program, along with green tips, valuable links, and DeMaio weather, are a click away at MikeNovak.net. That's MikeNovak.net. Here he is, Mike Novak.
Red train. Really?
every time I fall behind, can I get ahead?
These are the Hillbilly Winos. This is the same group that does the theme at the top of the show. Good Planets Are Hard to Find. Do me a favor. Track them down, Heather. I don't even know if they're still around. Go to hillbillywinos.com, and I think that's what they had. I hope that... there's no H. There we go. Do they have their own website?
Yes. Yeah, hillbillywinos.com.
Oh, it's still...
Well, the last update seems to have November 5th, 2008.
So it's been a while.
Yeah. It's half in Japanese. They have a large Japanese following.
I have no idea. I don't know why some of it's in Japanese. That's interesting. So anyway, that's the Hillbilly Winos. This is the Mike Novak Show in Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM, part of Self-Help Sunday. Anytime you want information about things we talk about on the program, go to my website, mikenovak.net, MikeNowak.net. I always have links about the various topics that I talk about and other information. I got pictures. In fact, there's a picture, if you go to those pictures that you can click on from the home page, there's a picture that Heather likes because I look rather demonic. It's from the Morton Arboretum's Yule Log celebration. Me in the top hat with the... It was cold that
you
day.
You look cold. You look like you're doing... It just looks like you're about to thump Tiny Tim with your cane.
I know, and I would.
If he'd I love been, the holly in your hat, though. That's a nice touch.
Yeah, well, you know, it's a festive thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can see what I do when I'm not on the radio, and it's terrifying, actually. Oh, and I hope that some of you will come out to see Verboten. I saw you were on the...
I will attend. I will attend. You know what? This Wednesday or next Wednesday.
Okay, cool. Well, don't come a week from this week because I won't be there for one show.
All right.
All right. The Verbatim Verboten, in case you don't know, is a compilation of conversations that never should have been made public, or were not to, you know, for instance, the Christian Bale tantrum he had on the set of Terminator. We've got Richard Nixon stuff on there. We've got Orson Welles kind of berating the people he's recording commercials for. We've got Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis taping a promo for a really bad movie, and they know it stinks. And they're
that I'd like to see.
And they're going on, and they're abusive to the people who are recording it. And this kind of stuff. We've got the email that should never have been sent. We got a few of those. Have you ever hit that? Hit
yeah.
send, and then you went,
reply
all?
Yeah. Ah! Reply all's been my nemesis more than once.
Reply all is like the worst function ever.
Yeah.
Email.
Email. Yeah. It makes you conscientious, though. You have to pay closer attention once it bites you in the bum at least once.
So we're doing this show called Verbatim Verboten, and these scenes, these pieces, are read by actors on stage. We have scripts in our hand because we're playing a zillion different roles. We don't memorize them. We go up there and do it and perform these pieces, and sometimes really goofy stuff comes out of it. And it's Wednesday nights at 7-ish. I say 7-ish. Because that's what it says on the publicity. We really don't get rolling until about 7:15. Hamburger Mary's up in Andersonville. And the stuff is on my website. Actually, from last week's show, you can find the links there. And I'm going to be hosting it this Wednesday. I'm the host. But a week from Wednesday, I've got a benefit that I'm hosting. I'm emceeing, so I'm going to have to miss 1 week of it. But so come out this week and see Verbatim. They're boating. It's really kind of fun. It's a really nice, goofy way to spend an evening and have a drink.
Yeah.
And it's
well,
right
you
before.
Keep hearing about this sort of thing because, like, Tiger Woods' phone messages were out.
We got a Tiger Woods piece.
And Alec Baldwin's with his daughter. Do you think they leave messages anymore?
People still do. Who knows why they do? I don't know. We should have the Alec Baldwin
that
thing.
When he rants about his daughter?
Yeah,
oh,
yeah,
that was a rough one.
I
felt bad for him because he was... You know, it seemed like he was, you know, genuinely upset and had a good foundation for being upset.
Yeah.
And ranted. And that's rough.
So these are the kinds of things that are in there. What else did I want to... Oh, yeah. One other thing. Go to the my website homepage, MikeNovak.net. We've got – I'm president of the Chicago Recycling Coalition, and we have just redesigned the Chicago Recycling Coalition website. It's chicagorecycling.org, but the link is on the homepage of my website on the right side towards the bottom. You can see that. And I hope you'll go there to chicagorecycling.org and see all the good stuff. If you want to know about recycling in Chicago, that's it. You know, when you Google Chicago and recycling, that website comes up. Chicago Recycling Coalition has been around for a long, long time, decades now. And, you know, I don't take any credit for it because I just happened to be the only person in the room when they were voting for president, and that's why actually I was out of the room and then they voted and that's how I got it. But we are also on Facebook, and you can click on that if you go to the CRC website. You know, recycling in Chicago is not good. It's actually kind of a joke, and we're working hard to make sure it happens, and, you know, light a fire on the pants of the city, and so their pants will be on fire, and maybe they'll get some recycling here. So go to that website, and I want to encourage people to get on the mailing list for CRC, to write to us, to volunteer. We'd love to have help in getting recycling going in Chicago. And next week, I think I'm going to talk about that a little bit, because that benefit that I'm doing on the 27th, is in honor of Ken Dunn, who is sort of a recycling guru in the city of Chicago. He has been doing this since the early 70s, actually the late 60s. It's just the guy is amazing, and everybody in the world who knows anything about recycling in Chicago knows about Ken Dunn. And we're going to be honoring him, and I'm pulling up the... information here. Here it is. Doom-ba-doom. Give me just a second while the Adobe Reader loads, because I want to make sure I've got all the information right. And anybody and everybody is welcome to come to this event. It is the 5th annual Elizabeth I. Benson Award, and it's honoring Ken Dunn, who's with Chicago Resource Center and City Farm. If you know anything about City Farm, if you've ever driven past Division and Clyburn and saw the City Farm, that's where it's an organic farm in the middle of the city. Great stuff. Wednesday, January 27th, 2010, at the Wellington Avenue United Church of Christ at 615 West Wellington. It's a $15 suggested donation, but no one will be turned away for lack of funds. I love the way they put it. It will support Chicago Resource Center and City Farm. We're honoring Ken Dunn. I am the MC. Music from the Bullfrogs. Again, I performed with them. Well, I didn't perform with them. I emceed an event for the Illinois Sierra Club where the Bullfrogs performed not too long ago. There will be testimonies from fans and friends of Ken. Ken's unique, and I'm going to try to have him on the show next week and talk a little bit about recycling and where we stand in the city of Chicago. But if you want to go, 5th Annual Elizabeth I. Benson Award, I'll tell you what I'm going to do is I'll put all the information up on my website. Right now, you can go to www.waucc.org. You can make donations online or give at the door. waucc.org. And I'll put that up. And that's what I'll be doing on the 27th. All right, all that being said, let's go to line one and bring in a very patient woman, Maureen Phillips. How you doing, Maureen?
I am fine, Mike. Good morning. It's great to be here.
It's great to be anywhere on a Sunday morning, and I'm glad you're part of the people who are with us. And you got, speaking of big events, big event coming up next week in Valparaiso, Indiana, and that is the 7th annual gardening show put on by the Porter County Master Gardeners, and I know about it because I actually spoke there once.
Absolutely.
And you never invited me back, but that's okay. You haven't broken my heart yet.
Hey, now, Mike, one of the pledges that we make to our folks is that We don't recycle speakers for about 3 years because we want it to be new and fresh every year.
No, and actually that's a great thing, and I appreciate not having to drive all the way out to Valparaiso. As you say, it's a long way to go. Not really.
No. Do you know that the psychological distance from Chicago to Valparaiso is a whole lot farther than it is from Valpo to Chicago?
Yes, it is. I don't know why that is. But
it's the Chicago frame of mind.
It is. It is. That's the way those things work. But it's a great event. It's a great event to have in the middle of the winter. You've got some fabulous people involved this year. One of them is right here on line two, and that's Gene Starr. Hi, Gene.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
I guess if you say hi, Gene, then that's a that's a weird joke that you've gotten all of your life, haven't you, Gene?
Keep it clean, Mike.
Gene is a writer for Chicagoland Gardening Magazine, which is one of the places I know her. She also writes. You write for the Times. The Times of London?
Yeah. No, I write for the Times of Northwest Indiana, a little column called Petal Talk. I've been doing that for about, at least 4 years.
That's different from pillow talk.
Yeah, you know, I wanted to do the little 50s thing, and my editor recognized that and embraced it.
You're sighing. Why are you sighing, Gene?
I don't know. it's a condition.
Work is work, the way I look at it. I'm glad to have you, and you're speaking at this gathering, and Maureen, you're also speaking. Maureen, you're a master gardener yourself.
True.
Gene Starr's a master gardener. Now, Indiana master gardener.
Correct.
Yes.
Or Purdue. They call it Purdue. You know, it's Indiana, really. You know, Purdue doesn't own the state, you know.
Master gardeners are all connected to the land-grant universities.
Yes, that's
so
true.
So that's why we're connected to Purdue.
Exactly. I understand. I'm an Illinois master gardener, connected not to the state, but to the university.
Exactly.
And they make us learn the secret handshake. I don't know if they do that in Indiana.
That's just Illinois.
The secret gardening handshake. There's all kinds of rituals that go with it. Gene, you're talking about unusual bulbs for spring planting.
Correct. Yeah, it's the word unusual probably shouldn't have gotten in there. I made a mistake.
So it's just, can we call it run-of-the-mill bulbs for spring planting?
Okay, sure. I'm sure everyone will attend if we call it that. No, it's actually spring-planted bulbs as opposed to the tulips and daffodils. Going to be talking about lilies and dahlias and some exotic types, including ginger, some tropicals as well.
All right. In general, and I know there are different rules for different bulbs. For instance, if you want to plant a gladiolus, which is technically a corm, right?
Yes.
You have to wait till the ground is warm enough so you don't zap them, but there are some that you can get going pretty early in the spring. When you say early in the spring, how early can you be planting bulbs that are going to come up this same year?
Well, most of the bulbs that you plant in the summer like some warmth to the ground. However, the lily bulbs can be planted as long as the ground is thawed, of course, and not too wet. Lilies can be planted probably one of the earlier, maybe in April, late April.
You know, it's interesting that's always the caveat, not too wet. But in our part of the world, it's always wet in the spring.
I think wet is a relative term.
I think you're right, Gene. Planting spring bulbs is, people think about bulbs in the fall, but you're trying to get their heads turned around and say, well, wait a second, you can do this in the spring, too, because if you missed something in the fall, get it in the spring. And some things you can't plant in the fall for next year. As I said, gladiolus. What else would perish over the winter?
Oh, the dahlias.
Yes.
Dahlias love warmth. I think they're from South America. They really like a lot of heat, especially in the soil.
Right.
So, and begonia. The tuberous begonia can take a little bit of frost, but not too much.
No.
Callas, cannas, those won't survive. Although I know someone who had some callas survive in Northwest Indiana over winter.
Calla lilies.
Yeah, although that's a misnomer because they're not even related to lilies.
But that's what they're called.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of plants that have names that are misleading.
Right.
Geranium, for one.
Mm-hmm.
It's really a pelargonium, but who's counting?
Right. I call the ones the other geraniums hardy geraniums. I think that's one way that it has been agreed upon.
Hardy. Well, some people don't realize that there are two different kinds of geraniums. And, I know a lot of listeners of my show know stuff about plants, and other people do not know stuff about plants. And so you have to explain it, that there's the geranium you think of as a geranium with the big bright red usually or orange flowers is a pelargonium. And it's generally, it's an annual here in our area. But the hardy geraniums are sometimes called cranesbill, and you can plant them in the ground, and they'll come up every year and produce not the same kind of ball-like flowers, but very nice flowers that are purple or blue or white or pink. And I love geraniums, the hardy geraniums. A big fan of hardy geraniums.
Oh, yeah. You can put them anywhere, pretty much. They're a great ground cover. You shear them back in the heat of the summer, and they'll come back fresh and nice. The foliage on some of them is even fragrant. So it's a great plant.
We're talking to Maureen Phillips and Gene Starr, who are speaking at the 7th Annual Gardening Show in Porter County at Valparaiso. It's next Saturday, January 23rd, 9 a.m. to 4 p.m., Chicago time. And I notice, Maureen, you put Chicago time on there.
Well, we do that, Mike, because we have people who come from as far south as Indianapolis, as far east as Toledo, as far north as Saginaw, Michigan, and they're all an hour ahead of us. So if we don't put that on there, they show up at 8 o'clock ready to go.
But that's what gardeners do anyway.
Well, that's true. But they're
at 8 o'clock,
the night, some of them.
And they want to get all the good plants first before anybody else. And one of the people that you're going to have there is somebody that I have not talked to on this show. I don't think we have talked at all on the current incarnation of my show. Connor Shaw is on line 3. How you doing, Connor?
I'm doing well, sir. Thank you.
It's great to talk to you again. You know, I keep threatening to bring you on here, and it hasn't happened. Well, I'm glad this is a good way to start it, because I want to have a conversation with you that cannot be done in 10 or 15 minutes about natives. And Connor is the founder and owner of Possibility Place Nursery in Monee, Illinois. His talk is on native trees, shrubs, and plants in the urban landscape. And you are Mr. Native Plant Guy, one of the foremost native plant experts in the state of Illinois, and quite possibly the country. And it's a pleasure to have you on, Connor.
Well, thank you, Mike. I don't know that I'm that good, but I appreciate the comment.
Well, your place is good. Possibility Place it has a great reputation, and you know a lot. You've been a plantsman for a long time. What's the focus of when you talk about, and the conversation that I want to have with you, as I mentioned earlier, is going to be the nature of natives. I want to get a bunch of people in the room here at the station and talk about what's a native and what's not a native. How do you tell what a native is? What is your definition? Because some people say, well, anything that grows in North America is a native, or then other people say, no, you've got to have it within a 20-mile radius, be able to find it naturally in a 20-mile radius. What about you? What's your definition of a native plant?
Any plant that sells.
Excellent.
Yeah. No, the reality of the thing is we sort of predicate the native as being indigenous to the Chicagoland area when our ancestors arrived. You could have native all the way across the country, but the problem is as you go further east or south or west, those plants don't make it well here and are need very special conditions, and therefore we tend to concentrate just in the Chicagoland area, pretty much the northern half of Illinois, We go into Iowa, a little bit into Indiana, because Indiana has some really unique plants that stop at the Illinois-Indiana border. We believe it's something about politics, but we haven't completely straightened that out.
And all those plants, they bloom red, right?
Right. Yeah, yeah. Although there are some blue plants out there, too, but, you know, we'll leave that go.
Yeah, but only in 2008 there were some blue plants, right?
Right on. That's right.
I tell you what, if anybody who's listening wants to ask a question of Connor about native plants or Gene Star about bulbs or Maureen, who's doing a talk on gardening in deer country, and that's always a fascinating topic, how to deal with deer, give us a call, 773-838-9278. And if you just for asking a question, I'm going to make a $10 donation to the Haiti Relief. And we're going to ask a couple more questions before the end of the day to get some more of that. So give us a call, 773-838-9278. Let me combine two of these topics, Connor and Maureen, and that's the deer question. And it's about native plants and how deer react to native plants. Is there any one particular way that they do? Are they less likely to eat natives or more likely, or doesn't it matter? Connor, I'll start with you.
I think you have to look at deer population sizes, and as the population grows, they become less discriminating, and if you have really, really high populations, it doesn't make any difference for most plants if they're deer resistant or not. The deer are going to eat them. So it really comes down to how many have you got in your neighborhood. That being said, some plants are more susceptible to deer populations eating than others, but even so, I've seen areas where we thought things were completely deer-proof, like pawpaw and even spice bush, and if there's enough deer in the area, they eat it. And I'm not sure how that affects them, but I'm sure it's not good.
You mean the deer?
Right.
Well, and they eat them particularly in the wintertime when food is scarce. So they'll come through your landscape, and they'll eat all of those choice little buds that have been produced in the fall and are waiting to come out in the spring.
Yeah, and that's really frustrating for a lot of gardeners, because you get one shot at having blooms or a beautiful plant, and sometimes the deer can take it right out. So what do you and I think the thing that Connor pointed out was that if deer are hungry enough, just like rabbits, they're hungry enough, they'll eat pretty much anything.
Exactly.
And that being said, Maureen, how do you deal with deer in general? What are some of the strategies you use?
Well, I use different strategies by season, and I also plant things that my deer tend to avoid, and we have quite a lot of them because I live on the edge of the Indiana Dunes. So the parks up here are great shelters and breeding grounds for them. So I recommend certain ground covers, native gingers that they tend not to like and that die back in the wintertime, so they're not available as browse in the wintertime. And some plants you just have to protect in the winter. In the summertime, you can spray them spray your plants with different sprays that are not attractive to the noses of deer or that taste bad. And you can change off those sprays every so often in order to make your plants unattractive.
Maureen, from what I understand, a lot of these sprays that you use work. And the problem is that you can't use the same ones over and over because even deer will get used to those.
Exactly. But you could change them from season to season, for example, or from year to year. So you might spray something spring and summer and something else in the fall. Another thing that I do is I concentrate on elements of surprise. And when they're surprised, they'll tend to bolt and stay away from the area where they experience that surprise.
So what you do is you see them in the yard and you run out in the yard and you go, ah!
Well, some days I feel like that.
Or you put Joe Biden in your yard to scare them, right?
There's something called a scarecrow. That's a motion activated sensor with a sprinkler attached to it. So when the deer comes within the garden area that this particular device sees, it shoots water and hisses, and they tend to run.
But don't they get used to that, too, after a while?
Well, I find that if I put it out on Memorial Day and take it in on Labor Day, I've pretty much protected my perennial from them over the summer. And then they'll get reacclimated to it the following year.
Gene Starr, what about bulbs? What bulbs can you plant in the spring, if any, that might be deer resistant?
There probably aren't any. They love lilies. They like Connor said, if they're hungry enough, they'll eat pretty much anything. I haven't had a big problem with deer in the summer. They usually are bad in the spring and the fall, which is when things are just coming up and you really are excited, and then they chomp them down. But
because I know that there are plants you can plant in the fall that are fairly deer resistant, like allium.
Yeah, they don't like allium.
Fritillaria.
And, daffodils. They don't seem to bother daffodils. They love tulips.
Oh yeah, it's like putting chocolate out there.
Oh yeah. There's the fritillarias. There are a few fall planted, but allium is great, and that's one of my favorites.
I think allium is a wonderful plant. More people should have allium in their yard. Because it's then you're not going to have those kinds of problems, and they're great plants, and they're generally maintenance free. Just they're real easy to deal with.
Mm-hmm. If the drainage is good.
Yeah, if the drainage is good.
There's another way we found to deal with them. If you actually put in shrub borders and mass the plant material close together, unlike a lot of people where they tend to want to do specimen plantings, but if you mass it together, the deer tend not to want to penetrate into that border. They will only nibble on the outside edge.
Interesting. That sounds like a good strategy. Yeah, because what folks want to do is they want to have a beautiful specimen and, oh, let's put it out by itself, and it's basically setting the table for the deer, isn't it, Connor?
Right. You get all four of them on four sides. It's a great look.
Your talk, Connor, native trees, shrubs, and plants in the urban landscape. What are the particular problems with having natives in an urban setting?
There really there isn't any. It's really more a matter of looking at your soil types and your situation, an old house, a new house, and trying to determine what plants would fit there best ecologically. And for all intents and purposes, pretty much what's native out there, we can pretty much fit in most landscapes. Occasionally you always come against one where the ground is like concrete and there are issues with that. But for all intents and purposes, there are native plants that meet every situation.
All right, let me give you a situation here. You got dry shade in an urban setting, which often happens because there's lots of shade in the city. And often you can't get water to certain parts, like a parkway or something like that. Let's say you got a situation like that. Give me a shrub that, or a couple that you think would work in that situation.
Okay, how big do you want them?
6 foot.
Oh, the magical 6 foot.
Oh, sorry about that, Connor. Okay, yeah. Give me some. Well, okay, all right. Let me ask you, what's wrong with the magical 6 foot question?
Well, I always get a charge out of people when they tell me that they want a plant to grow to a certain height and stop. And when plants stop, they're dead. So I'm never totally sure how you want to approach that. A dry understory shrub that does well, and if the soils are not compacted, is a Viburnum acerifolium. Would get to that about that 6 foot range.
And what is
Leaf Viburnum?
Maple leaf Viburnum. Explain what the characteristics are of a maple leaf Viburnum.
It's fairly a typical Viburnum in the sense that it has white flowers. It has leaves very similar to maples. It has a sort of an orangish red fall color and black fruit.
It sounds...
tends to be vase-shaped and also tends to be a little more open, which is expected in shade than you expect to see a little fuller in sun. I can say too that as you progress into shade, your fall colors tend to go from red to yellow. The more shade there is, the more yellow you tend to get.
Yeah. Yeah, you need some of that sun to get the really, really good color.
And if you could always get a couple hours of sunlight, it's great. But this plant actually lives in oak woods and is always does very well in understory.
Hey, you know, it's interesting that there are so many viburnums out there, and the ones that a lot of people choose are the ones that are not native.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, there are plenty of native viburnums. And one of the great things about viburnums is that often you can use them in shadier areas.
You can, but you will find that one tends to be the most shade-tolerant. Viburnum trilobum is reasonably shade-tolerant. Actually, everybody points to Blackhaw viburnum and Nannyberry as both being shade-tolerant, but the reality of the thing is they're really both savanna plants and really prefer to be in full sun. They can go into shade, but they tend to perform less and less well, and by not flowering, and fall color tends to be more muted.
That is Connor Shaw from Possibility Place Nursery. Can I get you to schlep up to Chicago sometime and sit right here in the studio with me?
Oh, definitely, Mike. I've always wanted to come in and bother you.
I know you do. He's harassed me at garden talks in the past. But that's okay. You know, I don't mind that. I should come and harass you. I would this Saturday, except that I'm going to be at another gathering in Wisconsin. It's a big weekend for talks. As a matter of fact, I'm finding that information. I'm speaking at a place called, or at an event called Garden Visions. It's up in Stevens Point, Wisconsin, and it's 2 days, Friday, January 22nd, and Saturday, January 23rd. Paul Tukey I am so brain dead.
That's
Safe
a cool
Lawns.
Name, though.
Safe Lawn. What is?
Tukey.
Yes, Paul
That's
Tukey
awesome.
From safelawns.org is there, and he's going to have a showing of his film, Chemical Reaction, on Friday evening. And then he's doing the keynote. He's the lawn care guy. This is what frightens me, Maureen, Jean, and Connor. He's the expert lawn care guy, and he's doing the keynote on Saturday morning. And then what do? The first seminar right after the keynote, I'm doing on organic lawn care. So I'm sure he's going to be sitting in the room, and I'm going to be nervous as heck. But then it's just the same way as I was when Connor was in the room. So, anybody can intimidate me. But then I do a session. I'm doing two sessions that morning. The other one is I'm not really a garden expert. I just play one on the radio, which I'm much more comfortable with, as you can imagine.
You didn't title your lawn care Torch the Lawn.
Well, I could say that, and he'd probably understand because, as you know, my philosophy on lawns is when in doubt, rip it out, because people love their lawns, but they're really high maintenance. Before I let you all go, Maureen, tell me what I'm missing about the event this Saturday in Porter County.
Well, first of all, it's a very popular show. There will be 2,000 people there, and they come from a 200-mile radius of Valpo. It was the festival of the year last year, according to the Tourism Bureau.
Really?
Absolutely. And we are going to have four of this region's absolutely preeminent plantsmen on the same program. Connor, Galen Gates, who's the director of plant collections at the Chicago Botanic Garden, Rich Eyre from Rich's Fox Willow Pines, and Kunso Kim from the Morton Arboretum. So if you want to hear people who really know their plants, this is the show for you. At the same time, you'll be able to go to the seed exchange. We're going to have 10,000 packets of seed that you can trade with other gardeners, and you get 3 free tickets when you come in the door, so that gets you started. And there will also be 75 vendors and exhibitors of information and products that you can use in your garden. It's just a great place.
The whole seed exchange thing sounds fabulous. That part really intrigued me, and it's a good way for people to get rolling, get ready for the upcoming season.
Absolutely. And right now, you know, you're getting seed catalogs in your mailbox every day. So this is a great place to go and learn how to start those seeds and to compare notes with other gardeners who grow them and to search for heirloom and open pollinated seeds that you might want to try.
Well, that's all this Saturday, and the information is all on my website, MikeNovak.net. Go to this week's show, it's the 7th Annual Gardening Show from the Porter County Master Gardeners. I've got the link there to the website, which gives you the map. It's 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Chicago time, and you should stop in on all of these seminars. Maureen Phillips and Gene Starr and Connor Shaw, thank you so much. And Gene, you got to come up here sometime, and we'll talk gardening gossip, you know, magazine kind of gardening gossip. How's that?
Oh, sounds tempting.
Now, you know, Gene and I write for Chicagoland Gardening Magazine, and it just got sold, and that's great gossip. I had Bill Aldrich, the former publisher, on my show last year, and he was just dishing. It was just amazing to hear him just go nutty. He's that kind of guy. He's like, yeah, I need loose lips here on the radio show. but we'll do that. And Connor, like I said, we're going to do that talk on native plants someday, where I get all these experts in the room and we just geek out. And you're going to be part of it.
Hey, Mike, are you going to be at the trade show this week, Mid-Am?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, well, I got a number of talks in there. If you happen to be in the area, I'll give you a holler.
Thursday is when I think I'm getting down there. Yeah, it's the big Mid-Am trade show is at McCormick Place. Is it McCormick again?
Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
I've even got my pass. I just haven't, you know, I haven't even had time to think of it with everything else I'm doing, but it is the big trade show. It's held every year in Chicago for 3 days, and horticultural types from all over the country come and the world come to the Mid-Am, and you know what? I'll track you down. Have you got a booth, or are you just doing talks?
Just doing talks this time around. That's more than enough.
All right. I will give you a holler. I got your number. I'll give you a call.
Hey, Mike. It's Maureen here.
Yes,
Don't
Maureen.
Forget, you've got some tickets to give away to this show.
Oh, you're right.
To your listeners.
That's right. I'll tell you what. When I hang up with you, I am going to do a couple more questions. Garden questions and or environment questions for our listeners, and the winners will also receive tickets.
Terrific.
And how many do we have to give away here?
You have six.
Six tickets.
Exactly.
So I can do it in three pairs.
Sure.
Absolutely, and I'll do that along with the doing a donation to the Haitian Relief. So all of you, Maureen and Gene and Connor, thank you so much. Have fun next Saturday. Wish I could be there, but we'll do it next year.
Sounds like a plan.
All right. Take care, all.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. Here's a tip from the Care of Trees. Are you aware of the wide range of services provided by the Care of Trees? They include tree and forest preservation, construction protection, invasive species management, woodland restoration, tree and shrub transplant plans, forest conservation and stewardship, environmental feasibility assessments, and even historic landscape preservation. With 9 locations, you know, they do a lot. They do all kinds of stuff. It's just amazing to hear how much they do. With 9 locations, the Care of Trees has been serving Chicagoland for 60 years. The Care of Trees shares your enthusiasm for the many ways trees enhance the quality of your life, and the Care of Trees combines that joy with a dedication to the utmost in client care. They really do put you and your trees first. Make the Care of Trees your permanent partner in enhancing the value of your landscape. You know, trees are important. They do add to the value, and the Care of Trees will take care of them for you. Give them a call at 847-394-4220, 847-394-4220, or go online to thecareoftrees.com. It's thecareoftrees.com. The Care of Trees, their business is people and their love for trees. Now, It's time to call back. We're going to give away some tickets to the Porter County show next week, next Saturday. And for every correct answer, and sometimes even an incorrect answer, I will donate $10 to Haitian Relief. And give us a call at 773-838-9278. 773-838-9278. I think we can squeeze a couple of questions in before the Mighty House guys show up at 10 o'clock.
DR Services Unlimited has been providing Chicago's North Shore with award-winning remodeling and design-build services since 1991, giving their clients top-quality service and real value. They're on the cutting edge of green building technology, helping clients make their home more energy efficient without sacrificing beauty or function. If you want to make your home more energy efficient, simply want to add a room or renovate, call DR Services at 847-998-1687 or visit them at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
This is the Mike Novak Show. You can find out all you need to know about that at www.mikenovak.net. You can also go to chicagoprogressivetalk.com. That kinds of websites you can track me down. So we got some people willing to join in a question here, Heather.
Yes, we do.
All right, let's go to Mickey on line one. How you doing, Mickey?
Doing well, and yourself?
Good.
Good.
So you ready to answer? Now, do you want an environmental question or do you want a gardening question?
A gardening question.
Okay. You heard earlier, perhaps, how tough the environmental questions are.
Yes, I did.
Like tectonic plates,
yeah,
you know? I had
that
no,
was all Rick.
That was Rick DeMaio, yeah.
He loves his weather.
Not just his weather.
Well,
I mean,
geology.
Earth sciences.
Yes.
You know,
very interesting.
I know. It is great stuff. You know, and that's when I was in school, that's what we called earth science.
Uh-huh.
All right. I'm going to give you... I know you, Mickey, so...
I think you do, and I will share with you that we share the same birthday week, not the same day.
Really?
But my birthday is the 19th.
So you're in the most depressing part of the year, too, to
yes.
have a birthday.
Yes.
Wow, happy birthday.
Thank you.
So I'm going to have to give you a tough one.
Uh-oh.
That's not that tough.
Okay.
All right, let's see here. I'm going down the list. Do-do-do-do-do-do. All right. This is, okay. Here's a question. Which of these is not a real plant?
Okay.
A, hairy-fruited vetch.
Ooh.
B, bottle brush squirrel tail. C, bristly dog's breath. Or D, spiny pigweed.
Oh, my.
I'm not even sure I know. See, I told you this was going to be a tough one. And, you know, I'm going to have to, while you're thinking of that.
Okay.
Well, yeah, let's.
I was sort of thinking A, but I might be wrong.
Where do they come up with names like that? Like, someone discovers a plant and says, I'm going to name it dog
yeah,
breath?
I don't know.
Isn't it pretty? Or is it ugly? Or
or stinky?
I don't know.
Yeah, now you want to get the one that is not a real plant.
Right.
You know, and I got to tell you, the person who put this, helped me put this together, neglected to put the answer key here.
Oops.
So.
Oh, no.
Here, may I? And I will help as
yeah,
your
search. So the question is, which is not a real plant? Hairy-fruited vetch, bottle brush squirrel tail, bristly dog's breath. I kind of like that.
That one sounds good.
Spiny pigweed.
That's it, huh?
And those are the...
okay, how about the dog's
breath? I'll tell you what we're going to do. What? You got to hang on for a second because,
okay.
You know, I dove into this, you know, head first without having exactly the right answer at my fingertips.
This might have to up your donation $5.
I think another 10.
Okay.
I think so. Just
so you just got the $20 bonus question.
Just for being caught
Mickey.
With my pants on fire here. All right. Okay, here's what you're doing.
Grizzly dog's breath, and what were the other two?
Here's what you're doing. You're calling the master of the key. The key to the answer is right here, and you're going to do that.
Okay.
Hold on. All right. While you're going to hang on, Mickey, just for
okay.
a second, all right? You
okay.
just you go. Don't go away, because I'll take care of some business, and we will have an answer in just a second. I can't believe this. I read this. I thought I knew the answer, and then as I was reading it, I'm thinking, no, I don't. I really don't have a clue. Okay, if a new commitment to indoor gardening is on your list of New Year's resolutions, take time. You know, I should take time to look at this because I got a feeling. I'm look. Hold on. I'm looking at my computer and see if we get a... Are you not getting an answer there, Heather? No? Call the other number on there. Dear me. Hold on, folks. This is just sad. We're going to call the other number for the answer key because she never brings her cell phone downstairs. Never here. Never does that on a Sunday morning. It's just frustrating. Okay, where was I? If a new commitment to indoor gardening is on your list of New Year's resolutions, take time to take a look around the house and tend to some of those all-important indoor gardening tasks you've been neglecting. Unruly and root-bound houseplants will thrive with a little TLC, some fresh soil, and a new roomy pot from SIDS Greenhouses. SIDS can help with the right soil mixes and fertilizers for every plant and one of Chicagoland's largest assortments of decorative pots and pottery. In fact, SIDS received a truckload shipment of pottery this week. Of course, they have a great selection of lush tropical houseplants as well. Remember, houseplants not only look great, they help improve indoor air quality. And you know what? I had a friend of mine say, you know, you got to do a show just on taking care of plants in the winter. And, you know, I've given some tips out, and I need to go into it in more detail. I'm going to try to do that in the next couple of weeks so you don't kill them all. Anyway, it's not too early to plan this year's flower and vegetable garden, and SIDS is ready to help. Their shipment of flowers and vegetable seeds packets is in, and you know the popular varieties go fast, so visit SIDS early for the best selection, including certified organic seeds. SIDS, Chicagoland's premier garden centers, are located in Palos Hills on Southwest Highway and in Bolingbrook on Napier Plainfield Road at Hassert Boulevard. All right. This is the Mike Novak Show, who, and your host is an idiot.
you said it, I didn't.
You're Woo! Right. I know you didn't say it. I'm allowed to say it.
It was funny, though. I did search, and I came up with the same conclusion, and then we got the call, and I got the final answer. So
all right.
That is an accurate statement
so
in front of you.
So next time I have a contest like this, I'm going to make sure that the contest designer puts an answer key in here. It would really help. Mickey, you still there?
Yes.
All right. We do have a correct answer. So let me start from scratch.
Okay.
Which of these is not a real plant? Hairy fruited vetch, bottle brush squirrel tail, bristly dog's breath, or spiny pigweed?
Well, my first thought was A, but I think I'm going to go with the dog breath.
Survey says you,
you
are correct.
It!
You got it. You nailed it.
All right.
All right. Do you want a couple of tickets to the show in Porter County?
You know, I would absolutely love it. We were actually planning on going. We went last year and really had a great time. And the seed exchange was wonderful. The programs were great. And they did a bulb exchange as well. And so I brought a number of packets of seeds with me last year. So for every packet that you bring in, you get a ticket to choose a packet.
Wow, you know the PR stuff down cold. You got
okay.
it.
We're going.
Okay, so you got two tickets. I'm also donating $20 to the Haitian Relief. because I screwed up on the contest. And I will put you on hold, or Heather will take your information. Mickey, thank you for calling.
Thank you.
All right, talk to you later now.
Bye.
Bye. This is the Mike Novak Show. We're coming up on the end here, and I'll have to tell you where the home improvement guys, Mr. Mighty House and partner, are. Are you? And I'll do that in a second. Here's the other thing I want to do. I've got still two more sets of two tickets to the Porter County show next Saturday. I'll tell you what. The first two callers who want two tickets each, call us at 773-838-9278, and Heather will just get them to you. How does that sound? Are you familiar with Aldo Leopold? He is considered the father of wildlife ecology. He was a renowned scientist and scholar, teacher, philosopher, writer. It's for his book, A Sand County Almanac, that Leopold is best known by millions of people around the globe. The Almanac, a literary landmark in conservation, combines poetic prose with observations of the natural world. The Almanac led to a philosophy that has guided many to discovering what it means to live in harmony with the land and with one another. Now, WRD Environmental would like you to remember something that Aldo Leopold wrote. Here's what he said. The outstanding scientific discovery of the 20th century is not television or radio, but rather the complexity of the land organism. Only those who know the most about it can appreciate how little we know about it. The last word in ignorance is the man who says of an animal or plant, what good is it? If the land mechanism as a whole is good, then every part is good, whether we understand it or not. If the biota, in the course of eons, has built something we like but do not understand, then who but a fool would discard seemingly useless parts? To every cog and wheel is the first precaution of intelligent tinkering. To keep every cog and wheel, I'm sorry, almost said the opposite. To keep every cog and wheel is the first precaution of intelligent tinkering. Now, at WRD Environmental, they appreciate not only the complexity of the region's ecology, but they're dedicated to protecting, restoring, and healing it. They create sustainable landscapes from large-scale master planning to community pocket parks. For innovative, sustainable landscape development and great quotes from important people, choose WRD Environmental, located at the Chicago Center for Green Technology, and online at WRDEnvironmental.com. I know you were on the phone with Mickey. Did you give away another,
Eve calling. She was interested in getting some tickets, but, I didn't think we were going to have enough time, so I told her I'd call her back after the show.
Oh, no. See, I knew this was going on.
Silly me.
You were talking to Mickey, and what I said on the air was the next two people to call in will get tickets. So call Eve back.
All right.
And we got time for one more if you call in now. We got two tickets to the Porter County show. So if you want to give us a holler, 773-838-WCPT. Now, I'm looking for the information from the boys that they sent me so I can tell you where they are. And if I can find the email, that would help, wouldn't it? It's here someplace. Oh, darn. It's here. Oh, here we are. Woohoo! Wow, just in time. Mighty House is broadcasting this week from Lake County Home Building and Remodeling Expo at the Lake County Fairgrounds. That's 1060 East Peterson Road in Grays Lake. So for the next couple of hours, go on, stop by. We got 2 hours till noon. It's the Lake County Home Building and Remodeling Expo at the Lake County Fairgrounds. That's Lake County, Illinois, right? Yes, because it's in Grays Lake. So 1060 East Peterson Road in Grays Lake, Illinois. Thank you all for listening today. Go to MikeNovak.net if you want more information about the show. We will talk to you next week. I think we'll do a little recycling chat, and I hope you join us then.
Okay, we ran out of time. I'm sorry. But here, let me get your full name and your mailing information, and we will get you your pair of tickets. What's your last name?